Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of December 13th, 2015. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. So happy to have a conversation with Kofi today. You may remember him from one of my earlier episodes. First, the verses that I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's week 37 of his Calendar of the Soul. Here's the one I wrote 2 years ago for that verse. Verse 37. With the coming darkness, my heart demands an action. I must carry an inner light, one with power, to awaken what can grow singing from my soul, whose song will stir all life to a memory of our creation from nothingness so long ago. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. 37a. I dream now my future self, my soul strong enough that a part of me awakens, shining in a garden of life, to the sound of the Logos, light in darkness, me in this coming winter. Kofi and I are going to try for the next couple weeks to get a handle on what Rudolf Steiner said about Christ. He didn't talk about it as a religion. It's very interesting what he had to say, and Kofi and I are going to work it out. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Kofi. From my point of view, it's not at all a religious conversation, because personally, the Christian religion is so vast. You have from the Unitarians, which are very mild and open to anything, to the Ku Klux Klan, which is totally a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. And the entire breadth of it is, they call themselves Christian, so... And in the middle somewhere is the Catholic Church and the Pope. Uh-huh. And then the Church of England. It's just so huge that there's nothing you can say about it except that there's nothing uniform in the whole thing. You've got a modern American Christian will think that to be Christian, you love guns and you hate poor people. You know?
Yeah, yeah. The American interpretation of Christianity.
So I am not at all talking about Christianity. Not a bit. I would like, I mean, you and I both have studied Rudolf Steiner, and this idea that Christ is something bigger than a religion is really quite an interesting conversation. And I'm a scientist, and I still have a strong appeal to what Rudolf Steiner said about the Christ being, right away, the Christ being, that's different than what most Christians would say. They would say Jesus.
I think most of the time, when I was studying Steiner's mentioning of Christ, it was more of, we're talking about Christianity, it was more of the Christ impulse.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of just Christian. And the Christ impulse is not a religion. It's not a set religion. It's anything that follows Christ, whatever Christ was teaching and doing. Uh-huh. It wasn't like going to church, yeah, to a specific church. That's why I think anthroposophists, even the Christian community, it's more something that I'm inclined towards, because it doesn't sound like what Catholics or what some specific religious people say. It's a general thing. And yeah, you can even count Buddhists as part of it.
Yes. You mentioned Christian community, and you mentioned anthroposophists, and I suppose there are people who might listen to this podcast who don't know either of those things. And in general, anthroposophists are people who, in a narrow sense, it's people who have read Rudolf Steiner and who think he was pretty smart. In a broad sense, it's anybody who has a wisdom bigger than the normal everyday world.
That's right.
Right? And then the Christian community, that is not everyone on earth who has heard of Christ. It's a very particular group of people who try to follow what Steiner suggested as a religious service.
Yes.
Not as a normal, he didn't start a religion. He gave some guidelines on how to have a religious service with what you say, this Christ impulse.
That's right.
And I've seen a couple of those services, and they're really quite interesting. It's it's almost like a scientist has designed a church service. It's very interesting. You've been to a few, I guess. You've gone to.
Yes. When I was in Campbell, that was where I'm going. Even right now, when I get time, that is where I go. When I encountered anthroposophy at first, it was a striking eye-opening to me that even some of my cultural traditional worship was also part of the Christ impulse. Things that the old Christians, the Christians who came to my country first, said they were idol worship. When I encountered Steiner and his teaching of Christianity, the Christ impulse, it even included some of my traditional religion. Christ teaching doesn't cut out anyone who is working towards goodness.
Yeah. There you go. My first impulse, or my first draw toward, you know, I had the normal American upbringing with Christianity, and I went to church as a child and then thought it was kind of silly as a teenager and then never went much again, became a scientist. My appeal toward Rudolf Steiner's ideas was that there was this being that all religions have been talking about, and they just had different names. And I remember the Egyptian god Ra, was a being.
Amun Ra.
Yeah, Amun Ra was a being that the Egyptians saw as coming toward the earth. And the sun worship that we now belittle today as a sign of paganism and some decadent religion, the sun worship at one time was a true, correct religion of a being who would come to the earth and save the earth in some sense. I loved the idea that Rudolf Steiner had this picture that was bigger than one religion. It was all religions.
Yes.
Which is what you just said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was my appeal, the first appeal.
Basically that's what caught my attention and got me stuck in Steiner's teachings, because I realized that Christ doesn't really discriminate. No matter what kind of religion you are in, or what kind of, as long as it's within the wisdom that he presented to the earth, you are included. And it appeals to me, and all my old way of Christianity, whereby you don't talk to people who are not a part of your church, or You have to try and convince them, other people, that the way they worship is not good, that they should stop.
Yeah.
It's now, right now, when I understood what Christ stands for, it's just an absurd kind of thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's most thinking people's problem with any religion, is the discriminatory aspect. You know, the simplest question, well, what about them if they haven't heard of Christ, if they haven't heard of Jesus, will they go to hell? You know, this kind of question,
yes,
is so simplistic. And then the answer is so simplistic. Well, yes. Yes, they will go to hell. You know, or the great one, the primitive person is told that they will go to hell now that they've heard of Christ. Mm-hmm. The person will say, why did you tell me then? Why did you tell me? Because before that I was okay, but now you're telling me I'm going to go to hell. And now it's just so terrible. So terrible. Cannot be. I've postulated for myself, if I'm ever in the presence of a petty and vindictive God, I will not believe in him. No matter how powerful this being in front of me is, I will choose in my own mind that is not a God worthy of my honor.
I think I discussed this topic with you before, or maybe I just said it in a passing conversation, that after I met anthroposophy and Steiner's teachings about the Christ impulse, I also encountered some writings of Spinoza.
Oh yeah,
a philosopher in Germany.
1800s.
And the way he described, he was a Jewish person, and
yes,
he got excommunicated from the Jewish religion because he said that if their God is a God who likes some people so much that he will destroy others, so yeah, those people will exist. then he doesn't want to be a follower of that God.
Yeah.
He will follow a God who created everybody and likes everybody that he created. and they said he was a He was speaking against the religion there, Jewish religion. So his parents disowned him and they excommunicated him.
Yeah.
And exactly that's what I think, that the Christ embraced everybody because that is how he is. He represents humanity, everybody. It's not. He doesn't. Even it goes beyond humanity. It's everything that was created. So he loves everything he created. He doesn't make other people or other beings become successful while others are destroyed.
Yeah. You know, when you say right away, wish to not discriminate pops up when I hear you say even he. I've never liked anything to do with sex. Or nationality or age or facial hair, you know, or clothing. All these pictures we have are limiting, totally limiting.
Actually, I agree with you. I'm in the same category.
Yeah.
Except that because we are humans.
Yes.
And the people who probably made the language, discovered started writing down what language you speak, they were probably males. And so they use the male gender pronoun. And when I say he, I don't really mean...
No, I understand.
I don't even mean a human being. Yeah. I mean everything that was created.
A moment ago, you were talking of a God that that doesn't particularly favor one group of people or one group of anything. And I remember this great saying. As soon as you hear this saying, you are stuck with it forever. So I'm sorry about the fact that you're going to hear it now. But it is like this. It goes, you love God as much as you love the person you love the least.
Uh-huh.
Which for most of us would be someone we hate.
Uh-huh.
Right? So
that's how
much you love God. You personally love God as much as you love the person you love the least.
Mm-hmm.
And once you hear something like that, you know it has to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah? So then you're stuck. It's like this other phrase I heard once. How do you make a man worthy of love? That's the question we always ask.
Mm-hmm.
And then the answer is, you love him. And that's horrible when you hear that.
If he's worthy of love, then you love him.
No, to make him worthy of love,
mm-hmm.
you love him, right?
Yes.
Yes. And so that's horrible to hear that, because then it becomes my responsibility
mm-hmm.
to make someone worthy of love. Instead of, I wish they were more worthy of love. Oh, my goodness, it's my responsibility.
Yeah.
By the way, I want us to talk about these ideas. We've only just begun, and it's already been 15 minutes. But I wonder, what is it that makes the idea of a being Christ as a possibility in the world, in our minds? There are many millions of people who don't have a feeling that there is such a possibility of such a being. So are you and I simplistic? Are you and I childish? Are we looking away from reality? As the great German philosophers would have said, God, there is no God, and the time that we invented God has now passed. We don't need it any longer, and now God is dead. Those are the grown-ups, right? Still, even today, those are the grown-ups in our culture, the people who have gone beyond the need to invent a God. So what does it take for you and me to even consider the possibility? Are we more narrow? Are we smaller in our thinking? Or have we gone larger in our thinking? What makes it possible that we can even conceive that there is such a possibility as this? Do you feel simplistic? Do you feel simplistic? Do you feel that you are childish to have any conception like this?
The way I think it's a little complicated than just saying you are simplistic or you are advanced. I think it's the two concepts, being simplistic and advanced, they are merged together somewhere within. I think it sounds like maybe I'm being a snob or I'm trying to be boastful, but I think it's melded within me to the point that personally I know that I'm stupid. I'm so simple, so simple that any clever person, anybody who is slightly clever, can deceive me. To the point that even a mental handicap, mentally challenged person, can trick me and get me.
Okay.
And yet, there are some things that I can think about, which when I discuss it with people who are really intelligent, they think I'm, I think, but I don't see it. It's just the way it comes. The moment, any moment that comes, I say or I do what I feel is right to do at the moment. And then if somebody stupid is trying to con me, they can get me. And yet, if a person discussing high-level mathematics, I also bring up my understanding of it, and they think I have a deeper understanding.
So you're saying this in connection with Christ somehow?
Yes. Uh-huh. So some people will think that we are simpletons. To continue to think that there is a God. And yet, I know that I'm not as simpleton as people think I am, because I do understand their side too. If I have to discuss everything that they base on godlessness on, I am able to go with them. I understand them fully. It's unfortunate that they cannot understand my side. And I view that as probably more deeper thought, or somebody who has deeper understanding than the person who only understands their side.
May I mention, I have relatives who have been abused and tricked and hurt by some Christian sect, maybe Catholic. You know, that's easy to say today. There's so much evidence of abuse amongst priests that for them to admit the slightest crack in the door that there could be an angel in the world, there could be even some low-level goodness, that is a door they cannot open, because if they did, it would somehow be forgiving the monster that abused them. So they are furiously against the slightest crack in the door toward the possibility of a spiritual being of any kind. You know what I mean? So they are against the idea. They cannot allow the idea, because that slight crack is a slight forgiveness of the person that they know is a monster, who was the priest of the religion. So I forgive them in that sense, that for those people, I am childish and I'm so wrong. I'm just completely wrong. I can understand their motivation.
You see, you cannot blame them for for closing off that chance, that avenue, that there could be somebody in the church. If their leader is even doing that, then nobody else. It's because of what they have gone through. Yet, if somebody will go a little step further, they will know that everybody has done something wrong. And for somebody to have done wrong doesn't mean everybody else has done the same thing. Everybody has done something else wrong, but it's not the same thing that was done to this person. And so they think themselves that they cannot be good either. Do they think that? I think they think they are good and somebody has done something wrong to them, which means they could be the angel. That person could be the angel, because the angel is the one who is perfect. So if you think that you were perfect and somebody did wrong to you, then you are an angel. So there, if you take a Venn diagram, they could be in the circle where angels are. So to disregard the fact that there is angel, because somebody outside that Venn diagram is not an angel, you are condemning yourself to as you are not an angel. And it's not like that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Go ahead. If you have something to say, go ahead.
I think that God is, I think we discussed before, God is so good that he both embraces the bad and the good. So for that reason, I know there is a God. I mean, there's a mighty being. There's somebody or some kind of a deity or whatever they call it that created both worlds. And that body, that deity embraces all. So the fact that somebody, something in it is a negative, doesn't mean the being is not there.
Yeah. You know, I feel the need to mention that organized religion has been violently against Rudolf Steiner's ideas of Christ, violently against.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear people on the radio talking about Christ and religion, I usually turn it off
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. I've heard it all before. But this is so bizarre, what Rudolf Steiner said, really. What makes it bizarre to me is that it's actually verging on believable. As a scientist, I actually start to think, you know, this is making sense. This is actually making sense, which is completely different in every possible way to anything I've heard from organized religions anywhere. And so I was hoping you and I, over the next week or two, we could have at least one more, maybe two more conversations about, I don't want to study for it. I want to remember what I read.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not an active studier of Rudolf Steiner's lectures on religion. Not on religion. He did not give lectures on religion. Mm. Lectures on the Christ and the Christ impulse.
Oh.
I would love it if you and I could kind of fish it out. Different parts that we remember anyway.
Yes, I think I would love to do that. I'd love to do that. I think that I'm like a hollow brain. Steiner's teachings of the Christ and the Christ impulse has planted something in me to the point that Maybe that's what you termed as simplistic or childlike. So to the point that everything, anything, tends to make sense if I put it in the category of what Christ will do. For example, somebody's being bad, like the person who. I'm talking about someone who we think is bad.
Yes.
Like the person who went to Colorado and shot the abortion.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. A lot of people will stand and condemn this person, which he deserves to be condemned.
Yes.
And yet, if you bring Christ there, what will he say? Will he say, go and crucify this person? No. He will say, he is a bad person, but it is because of those bad people that I came to the earth. So he has done something bad, but Jesus still loves him. The same way that person who went and did the abortion shooting, if he is also so much a Christian that he loves the children who are being aborted. Why should he go and kill somebody if he's really a Christian who loves everybody? Like, if Christ was really in him, would he go and shoot people? So to be a follower of Christ, you embrace more than just being a religious person or being a non-religious person. You are both, except that you don't do the evil things.
It's so complicated, huh? So complicated.
Yeah.
Because if you say anything like what you just said, I can tear it apart. I can find a sentence in there that, look what he said. And suddenly you are plastered across the world as saying that it's okay or that it's something else. It's the most horrible war of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We want things to be obviously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We want things to be obviously wrong. The saving grace that I see in Steiner's ideas, it has to be the bottom of every conversation, that we are here again and again. Here meaning consciously in bodies.
Yes.
We are here again and again. And so this person who is so evil today, or so twisted at least, so lost, we can empathize somehow of his situation that we have been close to it ourselves in the past, in one of our evolutions, or in the future after having been pushed too far. We can somehow place ourselves in the same condition somehow.
Yeah. Yes.
But only with the bigger picture can you do that. If it's one life, if it's only one life, and we only get the one chance, this is the most heinous, mm-hmm. horrible thing. You have stopped someone from having their one chance.
Yeah.
And children without their parents now, and wives without their husbands, and husbands without their wives.
Mm-hmm.
Impossible. You cannot condone any part of it. So the bigger picture is necessary.
Yes.
Again, but then again, here we are creating. There's something, you know, commentators say this great phrase, for this to make sense, you would have to believe in reincarnation.
Uh-huh.
You know, mm-hmm. and they say that sentence in order to show that it cannot make sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It cannot
not that they like the idea of reincarnation, but
no,
they're using the reincarnation to make you understand.
Yeah,
that
because that's
impossible.
Obviously stupid. Who would ever do that? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so.
I think it's also the same. It goes on the same line as you understand so much that nobody understands you. You understand the one who is against you, and you understand the one who is for you.
Huh.
And that is not easy for humans.
Yeah.
Humans, you can be in one state, and that is the only state you know. And you feel like it's not possible that I can be here, I can be this, and also be that. But it's the person who probably has grown a lot will probably be able to understand that. No, you can be here and be here at the same time. You can belong to this group and belong to this group. And because you are so wise, you have the wisdom to be, you know, you have a complete understanding of this and a complete understanding of that. You are able to sift out what kind of activity you have to do here, so it doesn't hurt you when you go to the other side. And because a lot of people cannot be what they are and also be see themselves in the other. They think of whatever they do in one situation that helps them, that is good for them, and they want to do it. They want to accomplish it, and they are not able to sense that, oh, if I am able to do it when I'm in this body, what about if I go into the other body? Will it hurt me or would it be good for me? And they cannot see themselves in the other, on the other person's body. So they just keep on doing it, and they don't see that it is hurting the other person. And I think you and me, I think what we can do is we are in one position and we do what we see is right when we are in that position. But while doing it, we also think of, because of the some kind of understanding we have of the other side, we can also think of the other person who is at the receiving end of our action and think through to see, if I do this, is it going to hurt me if I were the receiver? And based on that kind of thinking, you are able to decipher which things to do, which things to follow through and do, or not to do.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned a while ago of, I thought of this paradox idea that whenever I have found a truth in this life, there is a paradox, and the opposite, and the one and the opposite are together in the same place. Mm-hmm. If that is the case, then there is truth. Mm-hmm. Truth seems always to be a spiral of at least two opposites. Maybe there's more. All I can picture is two opposites. Like you said, a simplicity and a complexity at the same time. That makes me think, aha, this might be actually true then, because anytime I've actually found a truth, there is a paradox right in the very center. There's a spiral, and the farther you go in, the more you realize you're getting closer to the opposite. And so I like it, that what you said, because it has this paradox aspect to mm-hmm. it, which makes me think we're onto something. Not that we're onto something as far as perception and being able to see. I didn't quite agree with you that I'm able to do that, but as an afterthought, I can look back and see how bad I was because I wasn't doing that. Yes, I can at least see that far, but whether I can do it in the moment is another question.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess what I was trying to bring about to express this is that you have some kind of understanding that when you do something in the state in which you are, you have the ability to think outside of you and ask an existing person in the other person to know what this thing I'm doing, how much is it affecting the other one? Just the idea that you are able to think that way, and but not that you are able to do it.
And the reason you say this sentence right here, the reason you bring this up, I believe, is this is a Christ impulse. This is not the Christ impulse, but a Christ impulse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think it's enshrined in do unto others as
you
like others to do unto
there you.
But
go.
If you cannot transfer yourself into the other person, then you are incapable of thinking of what the other person is experiencing.
Yeah. That's wonderful, Kofi. So thank you. I'm going to try to talk with you again next week.
Okay.
And see if we can get started on. I think we didn't even get started yet. Mm. So let's see how long it takes to get into it and to get out again.
Maybe I was being a too windy. Talking too much.
I've come so used to and loving the quality of your voice that I just love it when you talk. So it's so nice. I was expecting when I brought up the subject, I laughed to Barbara when I told her the idea. When I bring the subject up, I thought you would say, oh my God. And then that would be a joke because we're talking about Christ.
Okay. Thank you, Jack, for allowing me the chance to express my...
Very nice. And we'll try again next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you again, Kofi. And thank you for listening. If you have any desire, go to reasoningwithanoptimist.net and leave me a message. That'd be very nice. And we'll be back next week with part two of this. Thanks again. And this is Jack Brissett-Mills signing off. Bye-bye.